go, and I think we'll stick with that theme tune until that rectifies itself, that home and away thing. Okay, evening pop pickers, and welcome to the Naked Football Show. This week we welcome back a bird that was last seen circling overhead during the first half at Charlton, and he is the Vulture.
Hello, hello.
Welcome back, Town fan and former fanzine, those were the days, seller, Phil Pritchard.
Good evening, and hello to Fiona and Lauren. I was promised I'd say hello, so hello. And I hope you haven't rent the Christmas tree yet, Lauren.
Yes, Lauren, get off that Christmas tree. And of course, making up the team is our resident playmaker, Phil Ham.
Hello.
So, with the home and away dilemma still ongoing, we'll talk about the game at Charlton and last night's game against Leicester City. And of course, we'll discuss the possible ins and outs come January. So email in with your thoughts or insults or anything else to studio@icrfm.co.uk, or you can text us on the usual number, which is 07973 851 968. Now, I know you don't really like to keep going first, Phil, but as these two wasters didn't go to Charlton, I'm going to have to put you on the spot.
The lucky ones, they are, really. The first half was awful. I mean, it's really quite difficult to express quite how bad we were in the first half. We didn't really hold on to the ball. The ball just kept coming back at us, and the goals were all kind of poor goals. And I think probably a little bit harsh on Dan Harding to get the blame in the manner that he did after the game from Jimmy Chilton, because certainly the first goal, Gary Roberts didn't track Matt Holland, who put in the cross for Darren Ambrose, who wasn't tracked by Gavin Williams. And both our centre-halves managed to fail to miss the cross as it came across the 6-yard area. The second one, Harding headed the ball out for a corner, and then Neil Alexander missed the cross. So it was just a terrible performance, really. The 4-5-1, a lot of people are blaming for the defeat, but I think there was just we let in a goal very early. Heads went down. No one really wanted to kind of take the game by the scruff of the neck and sort of drag us back into it. And I think that's probably the case in a lot of away games this season.
Yeah. I guess the thing is, though, in any formation, if players have got a set job to do when your team's on the defensive, i.e. tracking your runs from the field, and you don't do it, it doesn't matter what formation you're going to play, you're going to be asking for trouble. And as you rightly say, poor old Dan Harding was doubled up on by Matt Holland and whoever the other Charlton player was.
Lloyd Sam,
that's the fella. And then Ambrose had the freedom in the 6-yard box to nod in the first goal. And as for the second, Harding either didn't get a call or didn't hear
it. Right, exactly, yeah.
Needlessly headed out. Alexander misjudged the ball. But even then, there was cause to perhaps get it away, because the boss was marking Irulumo, and as the cross comes over, he realises Alexander's missed it, and Irulumo's pulled off him and bundles it in.
Ooh.
So it's basic defensive jobs which aren't being carried out, and you can say that the boss is probably the most senior man in the team. He's got to hold his hands up as much as anyone else to set that example.
Well,
sounds to me like all the goals at Charlton, you can't blame one player for it. It's almost like, you know, it's a team goal conceded, if you like. I mean, it's, as you say, people aren't doing their jobs. I don't see how you single out one person, in this case Dan Harding, for what sounded like a collective first half shocker.
To sort of blame the 4-5-1 formation, which I think a lot of people said, oh, we never win at 4-5-1. I mean, the 4-5-1, I think initially they played it at Plymouth, which I think was the first away game of the season, and I think that was partly because we did very poorly against Plymouth last year away, and I think the idea of the 4-5-1 was to have an extensive midfield who would hold on to the ball and, you know, and therefore create chances. And to be fair, with about a minute to go, it had all worked, even though we were down to 10 men, and the referee gave an absolute shocker of a penalty. But then we had these two terrible performances at Watford and West Brom, where we played 4-4-2. And from there, the management seemed to think, well, the 4-5-1 worked all right at Plymouth. Let's start using the 4-5-1 as our away formation. Mm-hmm. I forget what the game, next away game was, but we played 4-5-1 in that, and we got another point, I think. And it seems to have developed from that to playing 4-5-1 away from home. And to be honest, I think that we're kind of missing. I think it's sort of developed at a tangent that we've kind of felt, that the management have felt that there's this kind of need to change things away, whereas obviously at home we're playing 4-4-2 with a very set formation and set personnel, and I think that really they just need to come back to kind of to square the circle, as it were, and the next game just to play the 11 that play at home, or is playing at home at the moment perhaps, and play exactly the same way. Because I think the other thing is, we just seem to be always on the back foot away.
Yeah, I mean going on, taking it on the stage further to the third goal, there's a long ball forward, the Charlton player was allowed to bring it down, controlled it, lay it off to Ambrose, and again, he wasn't tracked, and then he fired in a shot which left Alexander fairly flat-footed, and that's another bad goal to concede, again, from the team's perspective.
Mm.
But if you take those goals out of it, by all accounts, you didn't offer anything going forward, so you could say the goals could have been avoided in any formation. But if we're not creating and posing the other team any kind of a threat in the 4-5-1 formation, then where does that really leave us? I mean, all right, you could say that Charlton, West Brom and Watford are probably just three of the harder away games that we'll get this season, but even so, the fact that in the second half we played so well goes to show that we can do it against these kind of teams, so you kind of want to get on the front foot early on rather than being on the back foot all the time.
Yeah, we've got a couple of emails talking about this, because this is from Ipswich Oracle, also known as Simon. I personally can't rationalise Super Jim's decision when it comes to not playing Pablo away from home. He's made a clear difference, certainly in the last two away matches, so why not play him, and for God's sake play 4-4-2. We've also got the same thing from Gavin in Genoa, would you believe. Why is Jim not starting with Pablo away from home? There you go.
Well, I personally think the whole 4-5-1, 4-4-2 debate smacks a little bit of negativity. And by all accounts, the second half of Charlton showed we play 4-4-2, have a go at teams. If we start doing that for 90 minutes away from home, then surely that elusive away result isn't too far away.
And we did the same at Bristol City, by all accounts. Gave them a 2-0 head start and then started playing relatively well, but by then the games are lost. You can't afford to give teams in the division, especially some of the better ones. I mean, Bristol City are quite high up in the division, and Charlton are a force to be reckoned with. You can't afford to give those kind of sides in our division any kind of a head start, because you're going to struggle to get it back.
Well, I think Bristol City were a bit unfortunate to be 2-0 down. One sort of lash in from 30 yards, and another one with the penalty where I think the ball just kind of bounced off the surface, very wet surface, and it hit Alex Bruce on the hand, and it was a bit unfortunate. But again, we weren't at our best, and we were a bit on the back foot. But again, of course, we let in a goal after 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But Charlton, how much was the fact that we played so well in the second half down to the fact that they knew they'd already won the match?
Yeah. I mean, Charlton were in a position where they could not exactly cruise, but maybe not at quite such a high tempo as they needed to have done if they were still 0-0 and just kept us at arm's length and all intents and purposes.
They had the cigars and brandy out half time, didn't they?
Handing around the mid spies, long vine, weren't they?
Well, that's it. I mean, why is Pablo left out? Well, I think the idea is that Alan Lee is a better kind of single man forward in that formation. But Pablo has done very well lately. But I mean, the reason perhaps he was left out was that he didn't come into the game very much in games like the one at Watford and the one at West Brom, and not necessarily because of himself, but because he's a kind of player who relies on the midfield playing him into the game. Yeah. Whereas when the midfield aren't playing terribly well, and we've had a lot of games like that away from home, Pablo doesn't tend to play very well. I mean, that was one thing on Saturday, the first half. We weren't holding on to the ball. Well, the whole point of playing a 4-5-1, really, with five players in midfield, is to hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
To prevent the opposition keeping the ball. And hoping that you play the game further up the field and get chances from there. Well, the midfield weren't holding the ball. The ball was coming straight out of defence. There was only one player forward, which was Alan Lee. He wasn't getting the ball. The ball wasn't sticking up front, and it was coming straight back again. So it was a complete failure.
It's all about the ball retention and stopping the opposition playing with five people in there. You kind of think you might be able to do that.
Well, exactly. We couldn't string one pass together, basically.
I've got an email here from on behalf of Gavin Hurd of Ipswich. It's quite serious. Could I use the medium of radio to make you aware of a missing person? His name is Little Tommy Miller. He was last seen with his Uncle George about 5 years ago before moving up north. He hasn't been seen since. Could anyone help?
He had a good game last night.
Brilliant.
Likewise, Gary Roberts.
And Dan Hardy. Brilliant last night.
I think it's sort of, Tommy Miller is... the whole point of having Tommy Miller there is having a midfielder who can break into the area and score goals, isn't it, really?
Mm.
And I mean, he's not kind of the greatest tackler. He's not the kind of creative player that Alan Garvin is, but he's someone who gets up and down the field and gets into the penalty. I mean, it's noticeable yesterday that Garvin was probably seen as the central midfielder who was there to sort of break into the box. Well, he's not the quickest. I think Graham's a bit quicker than going goal at his age. And,
must be slow.
And it was, honestly, he was running in three at some point, wasn't it? But you can see why Tommy Miller's played from that perspective. But you know, his input into the overall play has always been questioned. I think both here and at Sunderland. Yeah. I think it's perhaps no coincidence that when you ask him where he felt most comfortable playing, it was in a five-man midfield at Hartlepool, when he was one of three in the middle, and I think it meant that he was really the
license to get
locked up. Yeah, exactly. I think that's he's probably playing behind the front two might suit him, I wonder. But
yeah, possibly. But you kind of wonder where, especially now I've got a bit of money to spend by all accounts, assuming the EGM produces the desired result on Monday. And in January, that's going to leave one or two players. I mean, Lewinsky, a quote from Jim Magilton, I think it was last week, he said he needs games after his operation in the summer. Oh. That's one thing he's not getting, his games, because he's not really been used. He's been used quite sparingly, hasn't he, so far?
Yeah, but it's difficult to give players games, isn't it, when you sort of... You can't just throw players in who are slightly unfit just to give them games, can you? It's a catch-22, really, isn't it? They can't get games, and you can't afford to risk them in games. So.
Yeah.
Tommy, if you're out there, can you call Mr. Jamie Jilton at Ipswich Town Football Club? Just let us know you're safe, right?
We've got one from Brendan from London. Pablo hasn't been playing because he's generally been rubbish away, e.g. Watford, QPR, Sheffield United. It's only versus Bristol City and Charlton that he's decided to play like he does at home. I now agree that he's worth a start.
I think he is definitely worth a start. I'm not necessarily sure that it's down entirely.
No, I mean, he's got to get the service, hasn't he, before he can do anything.
Yeah, I suppose we do come on to the question of what areas does Jim need to strengthen them, and who would you bring in?
Well, the guy from Hibernian, who's been widely touted...
Rob Jones.
Yeah,
Rob
Jones. By yourself on the...
Big Rob Jones.
Big Rob Jones. Doesn't make the retired Rob Jones. He played for Liverpool in the
90s. Yeah,
yeah. Retired at the age of about 26, didn't he, that Rob Jones? But this Rob Jones is... if he's as good as people say he is, he could be the answer. I mean, I think it was slightly obvious yesterday at certain points in the game that our two centre-backs aren't the most mobile. Neither of them are getting younger. I mean, don't get me wrong, I love the pair in the bits, but in a purely platonic sense,
in a masculine sort of football,
in a masculine football fan kind of way. And although the fact that Fabs is a great servant to the club, and the fact that Jason De Ross has also been a great service to the club, doesn't mean they're getting any younger. Yeah. And sadly, I think the time for them may be coming that you know, there is going to be a Rob Jones type or another centre back coming in.
Yeah, there's some guy in the Evening Star. Some guy called Phil Ham. Anyone heard of him?
No.
They're in the Premiership, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Phillim. But Gavin Mahn's been linked. I mean, as regular readers of the Days of the Days boards will have seen over the last few days, Gavin Mahn, don't really know if that's
I think that's because he's available and other teams have been linked with him that someone's kind of put two and two together.
Yeah, so I guess there's going to be an element of that, especially over the next month or so, next couple of months. But the David Norris stories resurfaced again. Carl Lafferty, the hooligan guy from Blackpool.
Hooligan.
I beg your pardon. But I can't tell now a lot of him, but from what you said in the paper tonight, Phil, he could be exactly what we need on the left flank, because we've kind of put a bit of a round peg in a square hole at times this season. Yeah. Billy Clark's done his best. Gary Roberts has
been flattered to deceive.
I mean, he talked about an example of a player playing for a contract last year, you could say. He looked full of promise when he was on the trial period on loan. And since he's been made permanent, he hasn't done an awful lot.
No, I can't imagine that Gary Roberts will have a large amount to play in the rest of the season.
No.
And unfortunately, he's on a contract, I think, until 2010.
Oh, God. 2010, what, 10 past 8?
I can imagine he'll go on. I would expect left midfield to be an area that they look at.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they were already talking about Kyle Reid from West Ham coming in on loan earlier in the season, weren't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, the left midfield, Wes Houlihan looks like the type of player Jim is probably going to go for are players playing at about our level who are perhaps impressing at clubs of a slightly smaller stature than ourselves, such as Blackpool, Colchester, Norwich, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, he's not going to go out and spend the £2 million that I think Lafferty was a laughable link, if you will. Because he's, you know, the people are talking about £2 million for him, aren't they? Yeah. And, you know, we're not going to spend £2 million or £12 million on one player. And presumably, Carl Blatter, he's going to think, why should I leave Burnley to go to Ipswich when there's Premiership clubs interested in me?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, going back to the centre back thing, I wouldn't be at all surprised if there's possibly two centre backs on the way, because the boss is solid enough in this division. He's pretty commanding, if not the quickest. Bruce has been okay, but nothing really that much more. Casement's a case in point who might be one for the future, but again, he's an example of someone who needs games, but can we afford to give him to him? Again, a bit of a cure at said kind of a situation, and cover at full-backs once Wright or Harding potentially is the sideline for whatever reason. We haven't got an awful lot of strength in depth there, although in fairness to Cito, he came in and did, I thought, very well last night.
He did a decent job last night, Cito, and it's obviously that he's a different player to Dan Harding, because he wasn't getting forward quite as much as the blonde bomber does, but I was impressed with Cito last night, and I've always liked him. I've always had a soft spot for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. He's made a few errors, and I think he's kind of suffered from errors that have kind of been very crucial. Whereas, you know,
Bramble syndrome, I believe they call it.
Well, yeah, but you know, a mild case of rather than the full blown.
Full blown attack.
I think sometimes players get away with errors, don't they? I mean, I think Alex Bruce made a lot of mistakes last year that he got away with. Mm. Whereas if it had been Richard Naylor, people have been on his back for them. Whereas I don't think Naylor makes half the mistakes that are kind of attributed to him, or people kind of remember him. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if current personnel were still here. If Naylor gets fit, he would be in ahead of Bruce.
Possibly.
Which I think was the case before Naylor got injured at the end of last season. I think Bruce makes a lot of mistakes, and always around the 74th minute. I don't know what it is. His mind tends to go, and he'll get booked or make a bad error around the 74th minute. You watch. Centre-half, definitely. I mean, Rob Jones looks like Jason DeVos, doesn't he? Minus 7 years, whatever he is.
Yeah.
And then there's this fella from Drogheda in Ireland.
Drogheda.
Because they've just won the title there, haven't they? Graham Gartland.
Mm. I've actually got a friend of mine who's near Drogheda, and he's a regular up at the ground there.
He's a regular drog.
He's a drog addict. He's a drug addict. We could be here all night.
I know.
I'll have to have a word with Paul about that. Mr. Barrell, if you're listening in Drogheda, get in touch and tell me what this Gartland's like.
But by coincidence, a friend of mine happened to be in Glasgow the other day, a friend of mine of Irish extraction, and he went to the, in fact, his car that was on last week. He was doing a business in Glasgow the week that the Irish B International was up there when John Walters and Alex Bruce played, and he went along, and Gartland played alongside Bruce. And at that time, I don't think Gartland had been mentioned in connection with town at all. And he was raving about him. He thought that him and Bruce had kept Chris Uwaluma, funnily enough, out of to be able to kick all evening. So town has certainly sent a scout to that game. And if you look on the Drogheda official website, they there's an interview with Gartland, and it says that town and Wolves have been watching him all season. Mm. So he's expected to move to England, and us and a number of clubs are interested, so he could be one. And as you say, two centre halves, not necessarily in January, but over the next
6 months,
before the next beginning of the season, I think it's a definite possibility.
Yeah. I guess it depends on the extent which division we're in. I mean, we're seventh now and reasonably well placed for an assault on the playoffs with a little bit of strengthening here and there.
Yeah.
And if we were to make it into the Premier League, then there's probably more change needed in the team than if we just missed out and we'll set another crack at it next season. So I guess there's always going to be an element of keeping some of the powder dry to see where we land up.
We've got
a text from Nick from London, who actually says of all the transfer money, how much is actually going to be spent on fees alone?
Well, it's going to be an issue to say, really, isn't it? I mean, it says specifically in the document that has gone out to shareholders that it's for short term investment, and it says specifically player, explained it as player transfer fees and wages, which, you know, I think is kind of basically means £12 million on players. I mean, what's a wage? Most £5,000 a week, something like that, probably.
Top end player that we're likely to sign.
So, you know, if we sign, I don't know, three players in January, you can probably fees were around 500 to 750 to a million, something like that. You can probably work out roughly how many players it's going to be.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that's the market he's going to look at. There's no way he's going to make the I don't think Jim is desperate, I think, not to make the mistakes that George made in the summer of 2001.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at the sides that have been promoted over the last few years. I mean, Paul Merson at Portsmouth is probably as good an example as any. He's someone who's been a very well established international player over their career, coming to their sort of, I don't know, 33, 34 kind of age bracket, and looking for